Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Game Informer Show podcast. I'm Ben Hansen, joined by Joe Juba.
Hello.
And just Joe Juba.
Just me. Sorry, everyone.
What are we here to talk about, Joe?
We're here to talk about Anthem.
Yeah, this is our new cover story. If we didn't hint strongly enough in the last episode of the regular Game Informer Show on Thursday, Anthem is our cover story. This is BioWare's new IP, new game that's been in the oven for 6 years by the time it'll come out.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. It's, in theory, like a core chunk of the Mass Effect 3 team. Since that game launched, then started cooking the recipe for Anthem. Casey Hudson was there, then he left, then he came back. The world has changed, and Anthem remains.
In the time since then, like Dragon Age Inquisition came out of that studio, too. So, yeah, there's been a lot of stuff going on.
Also kind of sort of Andromeda. We'll get into it. There's a lot of stuff with BioWare. It's a fascinating topic. It's a talker. And so you might have seen a little bit at EA's E3 press conference, but Joe and I have, in theory, seen more, played more, know more about Anthem because of spending some time in BioWare proper.
Sounds like you're pretty full of yourself here.
I just wanted to like let people know that we're not just doing like an E3 recap type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, these are based on hands-on impressions. We spent time playing the game. We spent... you know, hours talking, like interviewing the creative leads on the team and all of that stuff.
So. Yeah. And there's already a lot of content, a lot of tidbits with information, videos, everything in our hub, which is gameinformer.com/anthem. So check that out after the discussion, during the discussion to learn a lot more.
Also, the whole cover story.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's weird. That's new.
This is not a common thing for us, but, you know, we just redid our website and you can sort of see that in action by just checking out the full Anthem cover story. All 14 pages, in print anyway, is up on our site right now.
Have you seen it yet? Does it look good?
Oh, yeah, it looks good.
Okay, that's awesome. That's crazy. Yeah, the entire cover story. Everything's out there. Let's talk about Anthem. All right, so for the trip, we go up there, go to the old Edmonton office, which is a lovely studio. I thought they had moved already, but they hadn't. They're still in this weird hotel building.
Yeah, they announced last year that they were going to be moving, so I assumed that had happened by now. Yeah. It hasn't. They're still in that hotel building.
Which is very charming. And so go in there, sit down for the first presentation, and right away I was struck, just because it started with like a little internal trailer we saw. It started like setting up the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, all right. The gods are creating the universe. On the third day, something went wrong and they vanished and their tools of creation are left behind. We're just like, I didn't expect Anthem to be so heavily about gods, like out of the gate. That is a weird framework. But the interesting setup then is the idea is the gods, something happened to them, but all their tools are left behind. And I would argue it's echoes of the Anthem of Creation, as BioWare would put it, you know? And all their tools are left behind, and that makes for an unstable, changing world.
Yeah, I think that's the premise that they're going with in terms, because like at first it seems like, okay, another BioWare game, another precursor civilization,
100%,
right?
Yep.
But I think the emphasis is less on precursor civilization and more on the idea of this like unstable technology that is changing the world and that has different powers that players and antagonists or whatever can tap into.
Yeah. And you mentioned world. It is one open world. You're not going to be planet hopping, at least in Anthem 1, you know?
Right.
And so I think the world looks beautiful. We can definitely get into that later on. But one concrete open world you'll be exploring, and it's not Earth.
It's not Earth. They were explicit about that.
Explicit, but I feel like every time we asked about it, and we just did repeatedly because we're very bad journalists, they would give a little bit of like, no. Is typically how they answered that question, where it's like, there's something going on here. There's some magic underneath. And they said like the big question for the IP overall is, what happened to the gods, the shapers as they're called? Yeah. Why is the tech left behind? What is happening to build this universe?
Yeah. The analog that they gave would be, I think, was the Star Wars analog, which was like you don't ask, like you don't say the humans on Tatooine in Star Wars are Earthlings.
Yeah.
They're humans, they're on this other planet, and that's just sort of what it is.
And that was one of the interesting things in the setup, too, is they push like the science fantasy. It's not science fiction. Like, there's no spaceships, that humans didn't crash land on this planet, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no microchips. There's a certain tech that doesn't exist. What else do they say? No highways, no factories.
Yeah.
Just, it's a...
It's not like mass production.
And it's a more abstract world overall. They said, like, it kind of has... It's not as scientific, because it's not science fiction in their minds. It's not as scientific as something like Mass Effect, where you can explain the mass relays. It's kind of fun to dig into the codex. In this one, it's much more of, you know, it's all build, it's all loose, it's much more mythical. Like, they compared it to Marvel, you know, or like comic books in general. Like, you don't get too nitty gritty trying to dissect, but like, this doesn't quite make sense. Like, yeah, it's not science, everybody.
Tony Stark built an Iron Man suit in a cave.
Right.
Let's move on.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like Marvel and Avengers came up a fair amount because it is very Tony Stark. It is very Iron Man actually playing this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in my mind, I mean, well, there's a lot to dig into with this game, I think. But I think the immediate thing that I think most people had after last year's E3 presentation is that, like, okay, this is another, like, this is Destiny, but BioWare's take on that.
Yes.
You know, and if you are looking for things that that really set this apart from that and make that, I don't know, after we went on this trip, there are certainly parallels, but I was less in the camp of like, oh, this is just BioWare's Destiny.
And more in the camp of it's BioWare's Monster Hunter.
So if you had to, it's weird because like, I was thinking about this, if you had to like triangulate where this game is based on like other games, it's at this weird sort of spot that balances elements of Destiny, elements of Monster Hunter, but with combat that feels like an amped up version of like Mass Effect 3 or Andromeda,
more specifically with that jetpack. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think that jetpack is really one of the main differentiating factors when you talk about like what it feels like to play this game.
It is wild, and I'm sure we look like real playing this game because it takes a while to get flying down. I guess even from the video last year at E3, which is all we had going into this, like I didn't understand how important flying is going to be this game. It is basically a flying game, right? You have a little overheat stamina thing on the bottom, so you can only fly for a certain amount, unless you happen to fly through a waterfall, which will cool you off. I don't know how much of that is going to be going on in the game. Like in the one demo we played, that was like right there, front and center, which is nice. But I don't know if that's going to be a big mechanic, is like, ooh, dipping your toe in to cool it.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope not.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a satisfying little thing, I guess. But yeah, flying. Controls with flying takes a little bit of getting used to. There's interesting stuff, like if you tap R3, we played on the PC build, by the way, but I'll use PlayStation controls just to confuse you.
Well, and all of these two, I mean, this is still a game in development, so who knows if these button prompts or whatever carry forward into the final version.
Yeah, but the basic idea is at any point you can hit some button, R3 for us, and then you go into like a hover mode. Mm-hmm. You just want to like float there and shoot, and trying to like get the feel for that and when you can rocket off, rocketing out of the water. Like there's a lot of little ways where you look like a real jerk for a while flailing around.
but I mean, once you figure it out, I think better than any game I can think of offhand, just based on the little bit of time that we played it, is like, I think it captures that sort of Iron Man fantasy better than anything else I've seen in terms of being able like making it feel like you're really like zooming around. Like it feels like you're going fast.
That thruster isn't messing around.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but also with a kind of like agility and control that doesn't make it feel like you're just like strapped to a rocket, you know?
Right. Rockets explode. So yeah, there's four different classes. So we played, okay, you got four classes. There's the Storm, Interceptor, Ranger, Colossus.
Yeah.
Okay. We played Ranger and Colossus.
Primarily.
Technically, I picked up a controller and touched Storm before they reset the build, but I just kind of like fell off the Strider, which is the big tall neck thing. And then they said, oh God, that's the wrong build.
Yeah.
So first in the world, touch that Storm.
There you go. And then the Interceptor is one that they were very deliberately not talking about. And like, even in terms of capabilities or what it does or anything.
We know it's a lighter suit.
Yeah.
Because they said at some point too, that like the gender of the character that you build in the beginning of the game, that'll actually change the look of some of the lighter suits. But stuff like Ranger and the Colossus, that's just going to be the basic exosuit.
Right, right. Yeah. But if you're a Storm or an Interceptor, or that's actually not even framing it right. First of all, you are one character that can switch among the suits. So if you are a woman, then you will see that reflected. Well, woman or man, you see your gender reflected in the Interceptor and in the Storm.
So the Interceptor, you can probably see it on Game Informer's cover, right?
Yeah, you can see all four suits. Okay. We have a special one of those cool, like, four different spreads, each one with a different suit on it. It looks nice.
Ooh, I love multiple Game Informer covers. Nice. But Interceptor, it kind of looks like Lucio from Overwatch. I don't know if that means it's going to be faster or stealthy. It looks sleek, you know, whatever you take that to mean. We don't really know yet.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, this is really, really reaching on my part. But there was one point during our studio visit when they were talking about different things that you could do with a suit. Like, hey, maybe you want to like approach a mission more as a tank, or maybe approach it more stealthily or mm-hmm. something. And that's not even word for word, but it was a sort of like comparison like that.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, I didn't hear any mention of stealth with any of the other suits we saw. So maybe the Interceptor has some sort of like, you know, sneaking capability.
Yeah, it makes sense with the name too. And the Storm, it's a little warlock. It looks cool. It's a lot of like teleporting around, blinking, flowing cape. You know, it's a cool look, but we didn't get
More of your like glass cannon, like mage style suit. Colossus is your tank. Ranger is your like all arounder.
Old boring Ranger, which is what you start out with in the game. It's going to be a short tutorial. Then you start out with the Ranger and then slowly expand. And it said like halfway through the crit path, you'll have access to all four suits, which is interesting. And in theory, then this is interesting to you. I know you bring it up a lot, but that idea of like, you don't have to make a new character like you do in something like Destiny, because you can just jump into a different suit and then work on that build for a while. So you're not going to, in theory, have multiple characters unless you want to have a guy and a girl. I guess that's the only reason where you would create multiple. Do you like that system in theory?
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately what that does is just remove some barriers.
Yeah.
Like if you think of your, I think it would probably be possible for you to just be like, all right, I finished the campaign. I tried all the suits. Ranger is my favorite. And then you just play Ranger all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that level of engagement is something that you could pull off. But for the people who are really into it, like those people who are really into Destiny and have like one of each class that they go and like run through all of the stuff with as all of their different classes, I think that what this does is just basically remove the need to go through the critical path multiple times.
Right.
Like you go through the critical path once, you have what you need, and then there's just that sort of expanse of the post game in front of you that you can
BioWare calls the elder game, you know. And they mention stuff like strongholds, which are kind of tough dungeons. They pitch them as very difficult. Mm-hmm. They compared them a little bit to raids, but they didn't say like this is the raid in the game. It's just a difficult challenge that you can have at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And even the term dungeon they hesitate to use, because it's really just a framework for like it seems like a more instanced area.
Okay.
That, anyhow.
You saw a part of the game that I didn't see. I was out filming some interviews. Mm-hmm. And so you saw kind of like a more free roaming thing, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
What did you see there?
Well, before we get to that,
please,
I want to talk just real quickly about the sort of story structure of the game.
Oh, gosh. Okay. This is big. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it has to be big.
Okay.
Because the impression that we got while we were there is that the story is sort of siloed into two different things. On one, you have this Fort Tarsus, this like base that you go to, and that's where you do a lot of like customization of your suit. That's where you talk to, have dialogue with characters. You make choices there.
Yeah.
They didn't say this explicitly, but it seemed a lot, if you play other BioWare games, that seemed like the analog to something like the Normandy or Skyhold in Dragon Age. Like this is sort of your base where you go and talk. And that is like single player exclusively.
First person.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't run into like other players there at all. So like that is sort of your personal representation of the world.
Right. So in that way, not counting the kind of like group meeting space, it reminds me a little bit more of Monster Hunter, where it's like the town is basically single player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you're in the gathering hub up top. Yeah.
Yeah. Except the reason why that, like, that structurally that makes sense, but it also feels like in Monster Hunter, there's not, like, it did not feel, at least the bits of Monster Hunter that I played, was like, there aren't big things happening.
You aren't changing the town throughout it. Right.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, so when you leave Fort Tarsus, then that's when the world becomes the sort of communal or co-op sort of thing.
Right.
So there are different things you can do. Like Ben had mentioned, there are like strongholds that you can do, which are like challenges that you want to get a team together for. But you don't necessarily have to do that if you just want to go and like, let's say you want to kill 10 minutes. You can just run out in the world, and this, and that's basically what I saw, is this free play element where it's like you're not teamed up with anyone. There isn't any like mission objective or anything. It's just, you're just out in the world. You're just flying around. You're shooting stuff. You're getting crafting materials.
Realistically, it's what you're going to be doing while you're talking to your buddy on a headset who's like, hang on, I'm making some more story decisions in town. And then I want to talk to this character and change my load. And I was like, oh, come on. I'm dicking around in this open world waiting for you to get ready.
Except, I mean, yeah, yes, I think that is likely the way you would engage with that, except it seems like it has more, it seems like it feeds into your experience at least, right?
Okay, that there's like, something
like,
out there.
Like the kinds of things that you're doing out there seem more beneficial than just sort of randomly killing guys and getting small amounts of XP for it. I could be wrong on that, but like that was the impression I got from it.
Sure.
Because, and so like while you're out there, you would run into maybe some like random events that are going on. Like the world has different like factions that have different responsibilities. And there's a group called the Sentinels that are in charge of sort of guarding or policing Fort Tarsus. So while you're out there in the world, you might run across a Sentinel that's like been downed.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to, you know, like shoot some guys and save him. And then you get some, you know, you get some sort of loot or other benefits for doing that. So it's, yeah, essentially just free play with events that like pop up that you can do. It's not, you wouldn't necessarily choose to do this instead of doing like a crafted story mission or a raid or something like that. Like if you can organize those things, I think the gains for that will be better. Right. But it's also, I think, speaking to like a goal to provide different levels of engagement and different levels of like investment for how you want to play for that particular session.
Right. As Bungie would say, an activity for every mood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's definitely one of their taglines.
Okay,
which
well.
Is fine.
which is fine.
It's, if they want to do that, that's okay. But just that overall structure, it's bizarre. It's one of those things where they were describing it and you say, this could work. Why haven't other games really leaned into it? Because they also stress the idea that, like, you know, in theory, if you're playing with your buddy, those story missions can't even really be spoiled for you because they'll get the mission from the quest giver in Fort Tarsus. You go out on towns, you'll hear like NPC dialogue, but it'll be customized for what you hear based on your progress in the story. And then it's just going to be the gameplay out there. And then they will go back and get the consequences in their own town privately.
Maybe we misunderstood that a little bit.
Yeah.
You can get those missions spoiled for you.
They said at some point that if there was going to be some, and that would be like later on, that they actually will have a pop up on the screen that'll be like, warning, there's going to be a spoiler.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
But definitely part of the pitch.
You can opt into missions that you have not gotten to in the story yet.
Right, right. Yeah. But in theory, the juiciest parts of that story are going to happen single player in Fort Tarsus where you're making those decisions.
Right.
And you are going to be separated from that.
Yeah.
Do you think this structure is going to work?
I'm excited about it, personally.
It's interesting.
But like, I also think that it's going to be challenging.
Yeah.
Especially for, I mean, one thing that struck me, I guess, is that like, as someone, like I've been playing BioWare games for a long time and I really like their style of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as BioWare sort of puts forward this idea of like, this is a BioWare story, this holds true to our ideals and all that. I don't necessarily think that's disingenuous because they have like, you know, they have a mission statement that this, you know, their approach with this game conforms to.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not the kind of BioWare story that you're familiar with.
And it seems like the earlier they can message that, the better off fans' reactions will be. Where don't go into this game expecting Mass Effect 2. Expect that concrete, clear story. And they even shifted in an interesting way talking about like, this game's going to have memorable characters where they're leaning much more on like personalities of the characters, the NPCs you're going to interact with. That's where it's really going to come through because creating a co-op story is very difficult, as I'm sure they realized in Old Republic. And Old Republic came up more than you'd think on this trip.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And yeah, and when we brought up the approach even to like, are you handling decision, like co-op decision making the way you did in Old Republic. The answer was, we are super not doing that.
I like that system, though. Like, everybody gets a turn to vote on the branching dialogue, but there's no dialogue, branching trees, choices with your friends on the missions. Only single player back home.
And I think, I mean, and that works for what it is, but I also understand the desire of, like at some point, that robs a player of agency. Like, at some point, they don't get to decide exactly what they want to happen, right?
Yeah. And in terms of, like, pitching is a BioWare-ass story and a BioWare-ass game. I feel like that was also their pitch with Shadow Realms, which was that canceled game down from Austin, you know, where it's like, it's the BioWare you know and love.
I don't think we got far enough into what that game even was to judge on that respect, I guess.
But. And I'm not comparing them, you know, apples to apples here, but it is just that case of, like, people should be bracing for something different in terms of the story aspect with Anthem. And I think the sooner you can reckon with that, the better off you'll be as a BioWare fan.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think that there are certainly elements of this game that will feel like the sort of BioWare games that you're familiar with in the past. But, like, I mean, the basic fact that, like, you don't have party members.
Yeah.
Like, when you go out into the world, you don't have, like, crafted party members. It's either you yourself or, like, your friends or other people who have, like, come into your party.
You have a crafted friends list.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Casey Hudson, who we interviewed on this trip, and it's fun to see him again at BioWare. The way he pitched it as well is like, well, you know, our games have always been about companionship. And now it's just your friends are the companions in the game in a way. There are still NPCs you're going to be interacting with, though, like in the Strider, which is the huge mechanized thing, which is kind of the roaming base for the freelancers, who's kind of your, what would you call them?
Kind of like a guild.
I guess so. Yeah. But there's certain characters in there that you will be developing relationships with, not romantic relationships,
right?
But friendships with, building up, you'll get to know them and stuff. So there are going to be characters beyond your friends that I think are going to be dripping with personality, but it's still going
to
be different.
Yeah, and this is also an area that's hard for us to, like, completely assess or speak to, just because they were guarding so much of what would stand as evidence for, like, oh, okay, this is what you mean, and how, like, this is a BioWare story.
Yeah.
They just weren't talking about yet.
Because the quest was like, hey, go kill this spider thing.
Yeah. Things like that. So then it's like, okay, can you tell us, like, when we get back to Fort Tarsus, you say that we will make choices that will, like, be important. What kinds of choices might that be? And there's, like, they weren't talking about that yet.
Yeah.
So, like, does that mean, like, geographical choices that, like would change the layout of the city? Does that mean certain characters will live or die? Does that mean certain merchants will give you better prices? Like, we just had no framework to talk about that stuff yet.
Yeah, the only hint, I guess, is just that idea that they said that the NPCs, depending on your relationship with them, would change a little bit in your ear. So maybe, you know, you can be more friendly towards some people compared to your friend's relationship with them. So in theory, there's going to be some sort of system of people will like you more or less in the town for different reasons. So I'd imagine it's a lot of those arguments of, like, Sally running that market across the street wants this, but I want this.
Deciding which NPC you give a thing to or something,
right,
like that. Yeah,
right.
But I mean, so, like, and also things like, you know, just the way those, because, yeah, they also weren't going super in depth on the, like, on the characters and what they are, like, your crew in the Strider, for instance. Like, we know who those characters are, but very vague, sort of
one sentence summary type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, those are the things that story is going to be built on. So it's not necessarily like any skepticism at this phase is coming more, I think, for me anyway, from just, like, a lack of information than anything that I've seen that I've necessarily been, like, haven't seen potential.
For sure. You know? And that's kind of my biggest question about the game too, is just, like, how is it going to feel, especially if I'm playing co-op with my friends, zooming out, like, the larger gameplay loops, how satisfying is that story going to be? How often am I waiting for my friends to wrap up a story? There are, like, little weird things that I'm a little bit worried about, like stuff, like the idea that if you're going on a friend's mission, you don't get the progress in your game. It's a little bit like the Far Cry 5 co-op, you know what I mean? So you can't be in the same track with friends. It's like you're helping them out on their missions, but you can't be lockstep progressing through the story together, as far as I understand it.
Huh. Yeah. I mean, I remember hearing something like that, but there's also the fact that, like, so many of the things that they were talking about were also, like, this is the way things are right now.
Which is surprising if it's coming out, early next year.
Yeah. So it's like, I guess ultimately, and this isn't, I'm trying to hedge, I think, a little bit on some of this because there's still 8 months until this game comes out.
Sure.
And like a lot can change on with like details like that.
I think so, yeah. But even just stuff,
I just know I know how people will like tend to hear things like that and then latch on to it, and it's like, oh, that was a thing that we were just experimenting with right now. Or
sure, so. But that is the way it was explained, you know?
Yeah.
But in terms of things that are still ironed out, or still being ironed out, just that idea of you can play the game by yourself. They said like the difficulty scaling was TBD. They're still working on exactly how that works, but they're like, all right, now it's going to be a little bit harder if you play it by yourself, but in theory, they'll make it scale so that it won't be brutal and you don't need three buddies to help you out.
Oh, that
times.
Is not the sense I got.
Oh, really?
No, the sense I got was that like, you will need to play this game, like that this is a game for like in which the content is designed for a party of four players.
They definitely are pushing that. Yeah. And they said that it's going to be tough if you're by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, that sounded like code for you should not play it that way.
But they don't want to, you know, rule it out because that's just a nightmare for them if they say you have to play with a group of four friends.
Yeah, I suppose.
But they have kind of like a Monster Hunter style flare system, right? So you can like help each other out in the open world. So, and also just that idea, do you have a better sense of interacting when you're flying around this open world? Is it just going to be your friends or are there going to be other random people out there? Do you remember what they were saying about that?
I'd be surprised if you couldn't maybe customize that to some degree, but like maybe just say, hey, don't put other players in my world, maybe.
Right,
but,
right.
I did not get the sense that it would be like when you're in one of those hubs in like Destiny 2 or something and it's just full of people.
Yeah.
They were talking about a desire to limit the number of people that are sort of like in your world or on your server at once. So it's like, it's not like you'll be going through, it's not like an MMO where you're going through a popular area and there are just like 50 other people doing various quests and killing mobs and whatever. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I guess I don't know who they're restricting it to, but I know that they want to keep the numbers down in terms of like, the odds are not good that you'll just be like flying around and like waving at other players all the time.
Emoting left and right. Yeah. Every which way. Yeah. And they seemed, it was interesting, like John Warner, the game director, he in particular seemed very dead set. And like, I know playing co-op can suck sometimes. We know the constant frustrations. I think you wrote about this in your cover story.
Yeah.
Like we're working to alleviate it so that you can have a smooth co-op experience because they know there's going to be a lot of BioWare fans checking this game out that probably do not want to play co-op at all. And it's like, it's maybe not as bad as you think. We can soften the blow for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were a handful of ways that I thought like just that it seemed like they were trying to make that as hassle-free as possible.
Yeah.
Especially for players that like, even if the concept of multiplayer gaming, even if you don't have a problem with that, if the sort of like social engineering element of that is a problem for you, it seems like those are some of the things that they're targeting.
Yeah.
The idea of like, all right, so you're in a party with your friend and you finish a mission. The game sort of by the structure of it says like, okay, well, you both just were in this mission. We're going to break you apart and put you each in your own version of like Fort Tarsus. So it's sort of this more natural and easy way to be like, all right, well, that was a good mission. We're done. Rather than if maybe you feel a pressure to like keep doing missions or tasks with people if you're partied up, but then also giving players, like let's say you and I just are like, hey, let's play together for a few hours. There's still a way to tell the game that like, no, we're just going to stick together. And then it doesn't like break you up.
Okay. Gotcha. So, anyway. Talking about exploring the world. We should mention, as people can see from the gameplay footage, I think that world looks amazing. It's like the same director, art director as Mass Effect 3, Derek Watts. It is so vertical and varied. There's a lot of playing this game where I found myself, okay, the objective marker's up there. I'm in a cave. I got to fly out the cave and then come around the horn. Like it's a convoluted, twisty, weird vertical world.
Yeah. And so this seems counterintuitive, but it was a fun thing to talk to them about because what you would think that something like that from a technical perspective would be much more difficult.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure, I mean, creating, this is not to downplay the skill it takes to like build an interesting and, you know, environment. But there's one aspect of it technically that is actually easier with the verticality, because that if you're always surrounded by big things and rock walls and twisting around stuff, the environment is sort of kind of acting as a shield.
They don't have to load all the textures
exactly.
and the world beyond
so
that.
It's right. easier for them to sort of hide things from you and load and stream the environment, because like it's not like a desert where you're expecting to just see like far off into the distance.
Yeah, it is a weird idea. They didn't frame it in any way where it's like, this is 4 times bigger than any of the planets in Andromeda. There was none of that framing, but keep in mind, I mean, they probably scoped out this world a long time ago, mm-hmm. before Andromeda, before Dragon Age. And so I didn't really get a good sense of how big this world is. I don't think it's going to be the type of game where you're going to be like, holy cow, this world goes on forever. Because yeah. they weren't like confidently saying it's our biggest world ever.
No. But I mean, again...
But it seems dense. It seems interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really what it boils down to is, for me, like, talking about our biggest world ever is like, I mean, that's a fine bullet point. But at the same time, I guess if you look at a game like Andromeda, which I think they were saying... Like, hey, these are some of our... I think they did say it's BioWare's
biggest.
Sure they
did. Yeah, we're on that cover story trip. Yeah.
But like, how much of that is sort of wide expanse that you're just driving your little Mako thing through?
Yeah.
You know? So I think the size is less important than the sort of like... than the density of it.
Right. That's true. But. Also, a lot of water. Outside of the waterfalls even. And I think one of the most interesting things about this game, other than how much you'll be flying and how it is a jetpack game, is just that idea of swimming underwater in an exosuit. It seems pretty unique. Just the idea of like, yeah, quick dive and then come shooting out of it again.
Yeah.
You can't shoot your gun underwater.
Yeah, there's not like underwater encounters. It seems like it's more of a navigational sort
right.
of thing.
But there are cute little alien fish down there you can poke around with. It's very fun.
Yeah.
And then, so on the mission, basically, we went, shot up some folks, swam underwater, had a great time. And then like the climax of the demo was fighting that spider boss.
Yeah.
Which will like crawls out, it's all spooky looking, and like shoot webs, and you have to like free your teammates. You can like use the flamethrowers on the big guy to take off the webs and free your buddies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seemed like we did not get a full display of this, because like we were controlling the Ranger and the Colossus.
Yeah.
But it seemed like they were at least talking a little about how some of the different suits' abilities are sort of meant to work together in that sense.
Yeah.
Like, the Colossus has a flamethrower that you can mount. So like, yeah, you use that to melt the what, webs.
Yep.
Do webs melt?
I don't know. They did something. They burn up. Colossus also has like a big shield, you know, so if you wanted to kind of aggro the enemy a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think the idea is that different, you can approach these sort of fights with different roles. Like managing, because also in that fight at some point the spider sort of crawls away and a bunch of little spiders come out, so it's mm-hmm. like different suits have different abilities that are good for like crowd control and things like that.
Yeah. So one other, they had another little moment during that demo where I was like, wait, what? Where I asked something like, so is this like the type of enemy, is it gonna be like Monster Hunter where you're gonna be like fighting this thing a lot? And the reaction from like a couple of developers like, oh, you'll be fighting this thing all the time. It's great. It's like, okay. It could be good and bad. Like if it's a detailed fight and it becomes a Monster Hunter level of like interesting fight, that's okay. But we don't have a sense yet of like if it's going to be repeated fights over and over and over again.
Yeah. I didn't totally know what to make of that comment.
Yeah.
At the time. I mean, I know, you know, if you think of a game like Destiny 2, there are people who are like, you're repeating different strikes or raids or things like that too. So
yeah, it's true.
You know, if it's just a way to like, oh, you get a great piece of loot when you finish that, stronghold. So you're going to want to do it several times because it gives you this good thing at the end. I don't know.
Yeah. And they were also a little bit tight-lipped about exactly how they're going to keep people around for the long game. They just had a kind of abstract slide in their presentation where they're like, you know, there'll be new things to chase, not literally, but just like new milestones, new things on the horizon that you're always going to be driving towards. But that is crucial. And that's yeah. very important. And they've yet to really go deep on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that they were trying to avoid is a sense of like, I think with games like Destiny, there's a sense of grindiness or like almost obligation to it. And what I think the whole point of the like chaotic world scenario is to give them the opportunity to like, to alter the world and make things different, to make that post-game stuff like more compelling on a continual basis.
And the easy example is like E3 last year when they had like the storm at the end of the demos. It's like, oh, if you log in and play with your buddies on a Tuesday, for a random example, then it's like, oh, maybe this part of the world is consumed in this crazy windy storm. That's an easy example. And I hope there's more stuff like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we didn't really see too much of how dynamic this world can be.
No, that's true. We didn't. And I think to some degree, maybe part of that is just wanting to like see, predicting the future for a game like this is really hard, I think.
Yeah.
Because like, I mean, before Destiny came out, Bungie was talking about how regularly they wanted to update and make things different also.
Yes.
You know? And then the reality of that situation set in and it ended up being, you know, less frequently than I think that people wanted.
Right. Because it's really hard to make stuff. And BioWare, I mean, might be a smaller team than what Bungie has at this point. They've been working for a long time on this game, but it is a tall order to support this game for a long time.
Yeah. So I guess for me, it seems like there's a lot up in the air right now in terms of just like what their needs and like what the community response is going to be. Right.
Yeah.
Like before you start planning out, you know, the what our 250 is going to look like, it doesn't seem that crazy to me that, I mean, like, it seems good to have like conceptual goals for that. But if you're too set in stone of making that happen versus like having the agility post launch to address balance needs or class, like this suit doesn't work the way it needs to or things like that. So like, I don't know if it's like sort of shrewd forethought on their part, being like, oh, we don't want to overcommit ourselves right away, or if they're just like wanting it to keep it a secret right now, or if they don't know. I don't know which of those things it is.
Yeah, I definitely got the sense, and it's impossible from one day to studio, but got the sense that like this thing's coming in hot. there's a lot of things that they're still trying to land, but they have time.
Yeah.
It's just, it is a huge, scary genre style game for them to tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about Anthem?
Whoa. I think, I mean, we covered most of the big bases here, I think. I would just encourage people to go check out the cover story online.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've got some videos up there that they can check out too. We put out a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah. There's a story about the microtransactions in the game, which they say are cosmetic. John Ward, the game director, said forever.
Yeah.
Cosmetic, which is great. But I'm sure there's going to be expansion, some things, you know, at some point in the future. Okay, so also rapid fire interview.
Yeah.
With Mark Dara, the game's executive producer.
Yep.
You might remember him from Dragon Age fame.
Yeah, he's the executive producer on Dragon Age and Anthem right now.
It's weird. There's a lot of shuffling the team up there that is fascinating. Like Mike Gamble, who's a producer on Andromeda, that we just... feels like that Andromeda cover story just happened for us and we spent a lot of time with him on that. And now it's like, oh, now he's just quickly shifted over. Now he's the producer hitting the ground beyond running, full out sprinting on Anthem.
Yeah, I got the sense. I mean, it does feel they didn't when we because we did ask Casey Hudson, like, is it just all hands on deck for Anthem?
Right.
And the response wasn't like, yes, everyone is doing that. But it also wasn't no.
I would imagine there's some pre-production for stuff like Dragon Age, other things they might want to do. And yeah, we have a video actually coming up later in the month talking to them about their what they think about the future and some other projects they're looking into and kind of like the zoomed out framework for what they want to tackle. I think it's really interesting and I'm very excited for in theory if something ever comes of that. But I mean, I think Anthem, and again, it's so easy just to be like, what happened to Bungie will happen to BioWare, but I am just bracing for, oh God, all hands on deck forever. This Anthem thing is a beast. We need to keep feeding because the community is going to have some thoughts when this game is released.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair.
And all right.
I think it's also fair to say like that they that they know that and that they are, you know,
yep,
hoping.
You can like, know an avalanche is coming, Joe.
Yeah, but. No. That's not a defense. I'm just saying like it seems like, you know, they are aware that flexibility is going to be necessary surrounding the launch of this game.
Yeah, for sure. So GameInformer.com/Anthem, we'll be updating it throughout the month. We're going to take a little bit of a break during the week of E3 because it's going to be just insanity out there. But after that, I think this is a great place, GameInformer.com/Anthem, to get a deep dive into this game. We'll have a lot more to share along the way. But cool. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. Oh, also,
what?
There's more episodes of the Game Informer Show podcast coming up throughout the week. Monday, we'll be talking about press conferences. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we'll have developers, editors, everything you can imagine. So stay tuned to this podcast feed or on YouTube if you're watching it there, GameInformer.com, wherever you want to watch or consume it. And thanks so much for watching or listening. Be sure to tune in on Monday. We'll have the next episode of the Game Informer Show. Bye, everybody.
Thank you.